Bach v. Ernst & Young. Mr. Byrne.
Good morning, Your Honors. Christopher Byrne for Plaintiff Appellant Gregory Fairback, Chapter 7 Trustee for Taurus Foods. May it please the Court, this case is before you on an appeal solely because the District Court entered summary judgment on its application of the Indiana Discovery Rule under the Indiana Accountancy Act Statute of Limitations. The appeal before you is also on the Court's assessment of costs, and plaintiff feels that those costs were erroneously applied.
Now, let me just ask you this. If the information that was available in the fall of 1996 was insufficient to apprise them of the injury that had been caused by Ernst & Young, what information was later obtained that did so?
Your Honor, we're going to ask the Court to not make any analogy to typical discovery situations, because SAS 59, if read properly, creates a totally different situation. SAS 59 is, and we'll get into this, is for a very limited period of time. For example, there was an audit opinion requested for Taurus's fiscal year 1995. SAS 59 requires the accountants to assess certain information that comes to their attention and determine whether or not there is substantial doubt about the entity's ability to continue in its ordinary course of business. However,
what did the report show?
Your Honor, the report showed nothing, which implicitly states.
What did it show about the assets and liabilities of company?
There is no contention about the
numbers.
No contention about the numbers.
What are the numbers?
The numbers were that Taurus had a $1.08 million surplus, Your Honor.
Interesting surplus. What were its assets? What were its liabilities?
I can't give you those exact numbers right now, Your Honor.
The report and the record?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. But the important thing is that it showed a surplus. But the point with SAS 59 is that a determination is requested for...
Now, when did she begin her fraud?
In the fall of 1996, Your Honor.
This is the same time as she received, or your company received, the report?
No, Your Honor, and it's very important to keep the timing very clear in this case. Taurus's 1995 fiscal year ended in January of 1995. It's a little confusing, but the bulk of the year was in 1994. Ernst & Young issued its written, unqualified audit opinion in October of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me go back to SAS 59. SAS 59.
Go back. Go ahead. You were going to give us the timeline. So October 19. That's this Ernst & Young report that didn't have the going concern qualification.
That's right, Your Honor.
So when did the fraud begin?
Well, it began in October of 1996.
A year later.
Well, that's not quite a right characterization, Your Honor.
I don't understand. The report is filed and were submitted in October 1995?
Yes, it is.
And the fraud starts in October 1996?
That's why I said it's not quite a correct characterization, because the one-year SAS 59 period, which ordinarily should be considered, ends in January.
I'm interested in that. I'm interested in the timing of the events, not the legalities of it.
Well, Your Honor, January...
October 1995 is the report. October 1996 is the beginning of the fraud.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, what happened in the interim, so far as the affairs of the company is concerned?
What happened in the interim, Your Honor, is that in January of 1996, a new fiscal year started, and that would have been the end of a SAS 59 one-year period.
Sorry.
In May
I'm
of...
I'm asking you what happened to the company. I'm not asking you about SAS 59. What happened to the company that caused her to, begin to defraud the...
Nothing happened to the company until May of 1996, Your Honor. Actually, for the first two periods of 1996, Taurus's numbers...
What happened in May 1996?
In May 1996, the new lending facility was put into place that was being considered in the fall of 1995. So in May of 1996, Taurus's lending facility changed. And what happened under that new lending facility was that based on Bank One's assessment at the time, including consideration of the audit opinion, they shrunk the borrowing base of Taurus and instituted...
That was in May of 1996. They shrunk your borrowing. Base.
That's right, Your Honor. And they instituted some tighter controls.
They did that in part in reliance on the report?
That's right, Your Honor.
And what was it in the report that bothered them?
Nothing bothered them. They wanted to see
If they shrunk the borrowing base in part because of the report, something in the report must have worried them.
Actually, Your Honor, nothing in the report worried them. They were worried before the report came out about Taurus's uneven economic...
What was about the report? You say they shrunk the borrowing base because of the report. What was in the report that caused them to shrink the borrowing base?
I said partially in reliance, Your Honor. They didn't
partially
shrink it...
Partially, fully. What is it that they partially relied on in the report that caused them to shrink the borrowing base?
Your Honor, if I might, nothing. But it what the report did was it allowed them to they relied on the report to make a loan to begin with.
Well, they changed from Indianapolis to Milwaukee, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Isn't that what really happened? So a different set of eyes were looking at it.
The eyes, I can't say that a different set of eyes were added to it. Todd Markley, the relationship officer, continued from Bank One Indianapolis.
So instead
for
of
a term.
Friendly lending institution, they got a more neutral. Right?
They got a different one, Your Honor.
And what was it that they were relying on in the report to make that?
Our whole contention is that, well, what they were relying on in the report is that they got an unqualified audit opinion which had an implicit...
So you're saying if the report had been more negative in May 1996 or maybe earlier, rather than giving you a reduced lending... They wouldn't have lent you anything.
That's right. You're right. Well, they might not have lent him anything, or they might have put a different...
In other words, they wouldn't have treated you better. That's your whole point.
I said they would have treated differently, which would have prevented Taurus from going on in business.
They would have shut you down. So you say that if this going concern statement had appeared in this October 1995 report... Your clients would have shut down. What good would that have done?
What that would have done, Your Honor, is it would have prevented the losses that were incurred by their continuing in business. Because instead of
they would have been broke.
Well, Your Honor, they had $1.8 million, and we suspect that if we have expert testimonies to the liquidation values, that they certainly wouldn't have been in the hole $3 million.
What evidence is there that Taurus would have acted differently if Ernst & Young had issued that going concern statement earlier?
There's evidence that come from all the important factors, Your Honor. First factor is... the owners of Taurus, Don Wells, if he were faced with a situation where he was told, you know what, we will not give you an unqualified opinion unless you show us a plan that's going to get you out of this situation. Okay, if he couldn't show them a plan, then a qualified audit opinion would have occurred, and his lending facility could have been jerked at that moment. Indeed, in October of 1995, Bank One could have revoked the lending could have called a loan at any time. So from the point of view of Don Wells, he has put in an affidavit, and he's testified that, sure, he would have fought for his business, but if he couldn't, he would have shut it down. The other evidence that we have are Taurus's lender. We have Bank One, which we have testimony in the record that says that an audit opinion was considered by them and it was important to them. And if you put that into the context of the existing...
Now, why should they have issued this going concern? You said the company had a surplus. So what is it that Ernst & Young knew that your guys didn't know that should have caused Ernst & Young to, despite the surplus, to say this company may not be a going concern?
Your Honor, it's important to understand what...
Answer my question.
What is it that Ernst & Young knew that nobody else knew? Ernst & Young did not perform the type of analysis.
What is it about the company that if they had performed the analysis, they would have discovered that despite its surplus, it might not last another year?
They have an obligation to run certain tests, which are as a result
what
of...
What would they have discovered if they ran those tests?
They would have discovered, Your Honor, the trends in Taurus were never-ending, that Taurus was not generating...
Trends are never-ending. What on earth does that mean?
That the unfavorable trends, Your Honor, despite up-and-down ticks, that Taurus was running a business that basically was not going to earn enough money to allow it to continue in the ordinary course of its business without an extraordinary disposition of assets.
Wasn't the comptroller of Taurus hiding that, though?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The fraud didn't occur until October of 1996 when Lisa Corey realized that, you know what, under this tightened borrowing base, we can't continue without some sort of measures, and unfortunately she took those.
She been prosecuted?
Yes, Your Honor, she was prosecuted and was convicted and served her sentence. But that's your...
So what you're saying is the company was trending down.
Well,
clearly your owners knew that.
They were not...
Everything Ernst & Young did, right? Isn't a case where someone is stealing, you know, like an employee is stealing from the company, the principals don't know. If the auditor did his job, they would discover it, right? That's not happening here, right?
The essence of this, Your Honor, is that, yes, it's the auditor's responsibility to make an assessment that
the
management...
The auditor's responsibility is to discuss, so far as not creditors, but the company is concerned, to, you know, make sure that the inventories are accurate and so on, and not being stolen blind and so on. But you say that what got the company into trouble was these negative trends, sales and so on. Well, the owners know that. You don't need an auditor to tell you your market is collapsing.
I disagree, Your Honor. It wasn't only negative trends. The trends were up and down. There's a certain insight of business. There's a certain insight that the auditors have a responsibility to do, and it's not management's.
Auditors are not responsible for... They are not supposed to have business insight. They're counters. They're not supposed to make predictions about how your markets are doing. They're supposed to reconcile your books and indicate, you know, you're not a going concern because your debt is too high and so on. They're not supposed to predict the trend. They're not supposed to... What is this business that they're... This boxed food business... Auditors aren't supposed to know about trends in the boxed food business.
Your Honor, to a certain degree, I absolutely agree with you, but you have to read SAS 59. And I'm going to read a quotation. Management is not required to perform an evaluation of the entity's ability to continue for the foreseeable future, nor is it required to state that the financial statements were prepared under the assumption that the company will continue in business. Under current GAAP and GAS, these initial evaluations and the need for disclosure are determined by the auditors, not by management. And this is in the CPA Journal of May 2004, referring to SAS 59. So with all due respect, Your Honor, you're half right and you're half wrong, because the auditors have a very clear responsibility.
No, you're wrong because you have not identified any... you haven't told us anything that the auditors knew that the owners of the company didn't know, because you say that even though they had the surplus and so on, the way you describe it, because of this surplus, to an auditor who didn't know anything about the boxed meat business or whatever, the company looked viable because it had a surplus. But you say, no, the trends were bad. Well, the trends, they're up and down, but they're basically down. It's the trends of the business, your costs, your suppliers, your customers, what have you, that's what the company knows.
The company knows facts, figures. This particular company, Don Wells, never went to past high school. But that's not the point. The point
is... That is certainly irrelevant. Well, I can't imagine anything less relevant than the education.
That's not the point.
Auditor's responsibilities don't expand and contract with the level of education of the company officers.
You're right. And here's what the auditor's responsibility is under SAS 59. The auditor has...
It's too vague for me. What I want to know is this business about these up and down trends. What is this about? What was happening to the business?
Basically, what was happening in the business, Your Honor, is that it was dependent cyclically on a certain level of liquidity through loans from the bank to get by. All right, and so every year they were losing a little bit more,
Why were they losing?
Because,
what was happening?
Well, Your Honor, it all gets down to sales and income and expenses.
Yeah, well, what was happening? What was their problem with sales?
Well, Your Honor, they had, when we had various ups and downs, we had changes in the business.
What was the cause?
They would, 1 year they would lose a customer. 1 year they assumed other expenses in anticipation of international meat business. Another year they had a good year. Their sales were up. Another year some of their competitors stole some of their business.
What's the trend?
The trend was uneven, but if you look at it...
It's not a trend. What's the trend? Why was it that they were... I mean, obviously, they're trending down. Now, what you've described is accidents. 1 year they lose a customer, next year they gain a customer. What's causing the downward trend? Why are they losing more customers than they're gaining?
Well, I would put it in terms of why are they not making enough money?
Why are they losing more customers than they're gaining?
Obviously, if there were market changes, Your Honor,
What market changes? That's what I'm asking you. What's happening to the boxed beef market?
Happened to the boxed beef market is that large companies were getting a lot of the business from smaller companies.
Right.
Market power, Your Honor.
Well, they always had that. What did cause them to have more market power?
You've got more firepower behind you. You can give lesser prices. You can give discounts.
They get the more firepower.
You'd have to ask Cisco, Your Honor. If I knew that, I'd be a rich man.
Well, do you expect the auditor to know this kind of stuff?
The auditor...
Why does the auditor know?
Excuse me, Your Honor, but the auditor has a responsibility to...
The auditor is supposed to know about the market power?
The auditor has an obligation...
An auditor is supposed to know about market power?
If it's important to the audit. Well, Your Honor, an auditor
is not a economic consultant who goes out and figures out what the market trends in an industry are.
We're not saying that an auditor is being a consultant, Your Honor, and this is very important. All we're saying is that it's uncontested that an auditor has this responsibility to make this analysis under SAS 59. And if they don't, it's not a gap opinion. And if it's not gap, and that's not up to judgment, expertise, or anything. Point 14 of SAS 59 tells you if they don't do it, it's not gap. And Ernst & Young here issued a gap opinion. And an auditor, Your Honor, has an absolute responsibility.
Counsel, is that a division between the lawyers who work for Ernst & Young or the auditors that makes that determination if that language goes in the letter?
It's purely the auditors, Your Honor, because the auditor has, based on what auditing procedures turn up, the auditor has to make a judgment as to whether or not there's substantial doubt whether the business can continue in the ordinary course without an extraordinary disposition of assets, et cetera. And that's a matter of the auditor's judgment, and it's right here in GAS, and they have to make it. And they do make it. And going concern opinions are issued sometimes, sometimes they're not. The auditors also have a responsibility to know their client, and they have a responsibility to know their industry. That's not to say that anybody is saying an auditor has to have a crystal ball, is an economic consultant. We're not contending that. All we're contending is that under the established rules and guidelines that apply to their work, they didn't do it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Your time has expired. Mr. Parson?
Good
May it please the Court. My name is Stanley Parson. I represent Ernst & Young LLP on this appeal. The ground Judge Tinder reached is really pretty simple for disposal of the case. Judge Tinder held as follows. In the fall of 1996, Lisa Corey knew that the company could not meet its obligations as they became due, so she engaged in a scheme to defraud the bank so that the company could remain in business. And in testimony that Judge Tinder cites in his opinion at pages 10 to 11, she basically says as well that there was a going concern. As Judge Tinder then pointed out, she and the company had an obligation to look back and say, is this something that the auditor should have told me about in their opinion? And based upon the recent decision, indeed, in Bambi, and I might add that the last four times the Indiana Court of Appeals has dealt with statute of limitations issue under the Indiana accountant statute, all four times it's affirmed summary judgment or reversed the trial court, which did not grant summary judgment. And in the last case in Bambi, the court set the standard as follows. Does the plaintiff possess sufficient information to cause it to inquire further to determine whether a legal wrong occurred? And as Judge Tinder held in 1996, that's what the company knew. Well, and to answer a question that Judge, I'm sorry, yeah. I was going to answer your question then. The problem.
But I'm going to be the devil.
No, go ahead. No, please. I was going to answer your last question. I may not answer this question.
Go ahead.
Apologize.
Well, that might help. Go ahead.
I think Your Honor asked.
You first.
You asked a really good question, because the problem is, if this does not create a discovery, then what would? Because basically nothing happened thereafter. As Judge Tinder pointed out, and as other courts have pointed out, at that point in time, Lisa Corey should have asked, gee, why didn't the accountants raise this issue with me?
See,
and she learned nothing thereafter that was different.
But I'm also wondering how the problems in the fall of 96 could have put Taurus on notice of a problem with the audit, when the audit is only supposed to identify the company's ability to continue as a going concern for 1 year, and fall 1996 is well beyond that period.
Well, I think the problem that Your Honor's just raised is the problem with the entire case. Because as the court held in Pugh, when the company lasts more than a year after the auditor's report on the financial statements, there is no claim at all. And that's the problem. The problem is the auditor is only supposed to look out for a period of time not to exceed 1 year. So by definition, when the company is there for more than 1 year, it proves the fact that there was no need to give a going concern statement. And that's exactly
well,
what
why should the sheer luck, forgive me,
well,
why
go
should
ahead.
The sheer luck that the company, you know, survived for more than 12 months erase any liability for failure to provide the proper information?
Well, I think because what the auditor is doing at most is asking whether substantial doubt whether the company will remain in business for a reasonable period of time not to exceed 1 year. If, in fact, the company does do that, then there was no violation.
No, that's not right. No, I don't think that's right, because suppose that's what happened here. The company would not have lasted a year except for the fraud, right?
No, I apologize. That's not, Your Honor, I apologize. That's not correct. And the reason
well,
why...
Wouldn't the bank have pulled the plug if they'd known what was...
Well, yeah, but that was well, all of that was well after a year.
No, wouldn't they have pulled the plug earlier if... If she hadn't engaged in this fraud,
the answer is they may have pulled the plug earlier, but it still would have been substantially longer than a year after the time period we're talking about, because the year time period we're talking about goes from January 95 to January 96. And testimony is she didn't commit any fraud until fall
October.
Of 1996, which was therefore it's longer than a year after the fact. So I think they
I see. That's a different year. I was thinking of the October. Yeah. October. Year.
Right, but even October, it's basically year anyway, Your Honor. But it does go from the date of the financial statements, not the date of the report. But so I think there, that when it let the company lasts more than a year, as courts have held, there is not a going concern. But to go back to a question Your Honor asked, you know, the financial statements themselves showed in the most recent year that the company's shareholders' equity had gone up. And it also showed that the company had a greater net income than the year before. And that's in the supplemental appendix of the plaintiffs at page 65. So this idea that they were trending down and therefore the auditor should have given a going concern is just not supported by the evidence before the record.
Why did they change banks? Or at least...
I think because the bank was always worried about the company. The company, frankly...
In other words, the Indianapolis bank was worried about
it? No, I apologize. It's the same bank. It's just Bank One Indianapolis and Bank One Milwaukee.
Right.
They changed it to the asset lending division, which is done when a company is perceived as being a company that you need more security
so
in terms of lending.
It did get a different set of people looking at the...
And it had a different set of people. In fact, the testimony in the record that they rely upon was not from the individual who was working with the bank at the time. And I will also add, in response to a question that Judge Posner asked, is that there is absolutely no evidence in the record at all that Bank One got the audit report or relied upon the audit report. And in fact, in discovery, Bank One didn't even produce the audit report. So there is no evidence in the record whatsoever that Bank One relied upon the audit report. And then I would also point out that I believe under Indiana law and other law, any reliance of the bank would not be germane anyway as a legal matter. But fundamentally, factually, there's no support for that.
Could I just ask you real quickly, do you think that there would be no liability even if the company could demonstrate the failure to notify it of the going concern, then caused it to miss an opportunity to avert the decline? Would there still be no...
Well, I think the problem is that's not the theory in this case.
The theory in
this case is that if you had told us what the situation was, we would have shut down quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the theory that they are proceeding on in this case. Did they miss an opportunity to save the company? Well, I think it's sort of their brief proves the answer to that is no. Because what their brief says, and I'm willing to accept this because I think it destroys their case, is that what they say was that after the audit report was issued in October of 95, the company was doing well. And they cite a Bank One internal credit report. And it was only in 1996, starting in May of 96 with the changed bank loan, with, I might also add, their declining margins, their declining sales, a bank loan which was more onerous, more competitive in the market with people coming in, national companies, loss of customers. You put all that together, that's what caused the loss. And if you...
The year covered by the audit, is that January 94 to January 95? Or January 95 to January 96?
No, the year covered by the audit is January 95 to January... Excuse me, January 94 to January 95.
And you said that year, that was a good year, and their income was up.
Their income was, and this is not a company that's making...
But you also said that Bank One was, you know, watching them and got worried. Well, what happened between January 95, say, the end of the audit period, and May 96 when the bank shifted them, you know, to their kind of distressed debt branch?
I think that if you look at the financial statements of the company as in the appendix, you'll see that the company is not in any kind of immediate distress. There's no trending down, but it's not a balance sheet reflecting a company that's making a lot of money every year. I think this year in 95 it had made $50,000 or less. In the previous year it had made $35,000, so it had gone up a little bit, but it's not making a lot of money.
And when did the comptroller get involved in inflating?
That was not until the fall, and Mr. Counsel said October of 96. So that was what happened later. And I might add, the testimony and the evidence in the record is that it was the fact that she did it, then she had to confess to it, and then when the bank found out that she had committed a fraud, that's when the bank pulled the plug and drove the company into bankruptcy. And the bankruptcy filing, by the way, was not by the company still.
Right,
the bankruptcy was by creditors. Now, the other thing that we've been told today is that, gee, if I was told something, Mr. Wells says, I would have done something different. I would have shut the company down. Well, We've cited his deposition testimony in this case. In his deposition testimony, he's testified that if he had been seen a going concern statement, he would not have done anything different.
Didn't the bank require that the annual audit report be shown to it? Wouldn't that be routine for a bank to want the audit report of its creditors?
I think that is customary. It's funny. That's customary. I'm not sure it's customary in an asset-based lending as opposed to a...
That was in May 96, right?
Right.
But I'm wondering, why didn't they get that... The October 1995 report.
I don't know. There's a draft of a modification to the lending arrangement, which suggests they're going to get one. But I mean, I know this. I know that Ernst & Young did not give them one. I know that they did not have one, and I know that nobody from the bank testified that they had seen one.
So, for whatever reason.
Now, I mean, having dealt with banks, you know, sometimes they don't get stuff they might have wished they had gotten. But they were looking at the company very, very carefully on a monthly basis. In fact, some of the documents that the trustee has submitted are, in fact, documents that relate that come out of the bank's files. But
so
I think
what you're saying, or one of the things I think you're saying is, so this is a fragile company. Everyone knew that. The company made $35,000 in 1 year, $50,000 the next. But you're saying that although fragile, there wasn't anything that happened in 1995, well, actually in 1994, nothing happened in 1994 that should have made Ernst & Young say, well, you know, this company may not stagger through another year.
That's
not the only issue. But
stagger might be a little far, but yes. There was nothing in the previous year that made it appear that there was a substantial doubt that the company wouldn't last for one more year.
But if you were a student of the boxed beef industry, you might say there were... I mean, you said something about national companies getting interested in this. And what is boxed beef, anyway?
Basically, it's frozen. There's some basically frozen package. They expanded a little bit from that, but their core business was frozen food, frozen meats, excuse me.
So they're a distributor, presumably, not
exactly.
A producer.
Exactly, they're a distributor. But I mean, I do think it's important. I mean, that I think a defect in the case is that there was no causative relationship between what then happened in 96.
I'm curious, what is it that, is there some literature or some general understanding of how much an auditor is supposed to know about his customer's business? I mean, not just the financial part, but
generally, you're supposed to have a general understanding of the business, but you're not a consultant. I mean, you're coming in there once a year to do an audit. You cannot know the business as well as the people who are running the business are running the business. What you can do is look at the financial statements and see, is it look as though this company is in some immediate peril? And if you look at those financial statements, which are part of the record, that's not the conclusion that one would reach.
How large was this? How many employees, officers, or whatever they have?
I honestly don't recall. I mean, I would say I think around 50 or so, 50 to 100.
50 employees.
Yeah, 50 to 100.
What kind of salaries were the officers being paid?
I don't think I know that. I don't think it's in the record. I mean, to talk about it a different way,
is the auditor is he supposed to look at past the sort of financial history of the firm. So if you've been auditing a company for many years, you would notice changes.
You would notice
that
trends.
Would be part of your judgment. You'd look at changes.
Well, yeah, and also I should add that if you look at Supplemental Appendix 65, in addition to the current year 95, this is comparative to the previous year 94. So you'll see what the 94 and 95 results are in that one audit report, which is in the record. And what you'll see is in both years there was, you know, marginal income, and then you can do a comparative in terms of shareholder equity going up from 1 year to from 94 to 95. So there's nothing.
Isn't it odd a small firm would have such a huge auditor like Ernst & Young?
I I mean, why wouldn't they use a different local law firm? I can go with a different county firm.
The reason I ask about the salaries is, what they want, if they wanted to shut it down, if they're pulling down $250,000 a year in salaries, it would be a disincentive to shut it down, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that's true. I mean, if you listen to Lisa Corey testimony in the record about how the effect of this was her the family business. In fact, if you read the criminal case, there's a concurrence by Judge Flom where he talks about she really had an interest in terms of sentencing in this case because of her connection and her family's connection to the business, and therefore there really was a pecuniary interest in terms of having the company to continue to proceed.
You know, it is common in these small businesses that the business itself shows a very small profit because the owners, you know, take the profits in effect in their salaries.
And I mean, the financial statements reflect the administrative and salaries, but it doesn't break it down by individual. So I don't think that information is in the record. But okay. Again,
thank you, Mr. Parse. So, Mr. Byrne, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute or so because we've asked a lot of nasty questions. So.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. It's very generous of you. As far as why there should have been a going concern opinion, I would refer the court to the expert opinion that is in the record from Mr. Fitzgerald, who, as an expert in the area, details exactly what Ernst & Young saw as a result of its auditing activities and why that gave rise to continuing SAS 59 obligations on the part of Ernst & Young. I'd also like to state, Your Honor, that there were no large salaries being taken out by this family. These people were hardworking, and they certainly weren't milking a company, and their salaries were very modest.
How large is the company as Judge Kennedy says?
About 50 employees was a good guesstimate, Your Honor. As far as whether or not the bank, there was evidence that the bank asked for an audit opinion and was holding up renewal of the loan in the fall of 1995 until it got the Ernst & Young's audit opinion. So although there was nothing that was produced by the bank, that doesn't mean that the bank never got it. And it certainly was bank policy to look at the audit opinions, and there's evidence in the record that they specifically asked for it. And the existing loan in Taurus was given a short extension and until they got the audit opinion. So this definitely was not only on the bank's mind, it was on Taurus's mind as well. Mr. Parson said that the fact that Taurus did well for two quarters destroys the case. That's a total misapprehension of the SAS 59 obligations. For that specific period of time, the auditors have to exercise their judgment as to what is exactly the situation with regard to any substantial doubt for continuing in the ordinary course of business. And Your Honor is correct. They don't have a crystal ball. And whether they're right or wrong is not the point. The point is that they have to shine a spotlight on that particular aspect.
What would they have seen in the financial records of Taurus that would have made them think that it wouldn't last another year? Because as Mr. Parson said, assuming he's correct, it showed a small income increase over a previous year.
It's not whether the company would last a year. It's whether or not in the year following there would be a substantial disposition of assets out of the ordinary course of business. Two entirely different concepts.
What would it, looking at this year's record, this year's balance sheet and the previous year, what would make the auditor think that something bad was going to happen in 1995?
I'll again refer you to Mr. Fitzgerald's report, but I will say one thing, and that is that it would have been evident to somebody doing a SAS 59 analysis that Taurus was dependent on the bank liquidity for its business, and it shouldn't have to be dependent on that bank liquidity to stay in business. Every business needs a bank loan for liquidity purposes. That's not the situation we're talking about. We're talking about a business that is losing cash, that's burning cash, and it, despite some ups and downs in their cyclical business period, but it's a business that is not healthy. It's a business that, and this is especially dramatic when you look at, if only they had known in December and January of 96, no one would have imposed the May 96 loan terms on Taurus, restricting their borrowing base to was a death knell in the end, and that death blow never would have happened.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Burns.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next case for argument.